Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
That's right, Dr. Dobson. And friend, thanks to generous listeners like you, Family Talk can reach more and more listeners with practical help and encouragement. To support Family Talk with your best gift, go online to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825.
Today on Family Talk.
In Proverbs 19:21, we read that God has a bigger purpose for our lives than we could ever understand. And one person who can absolutely understand that verse is today's guest here on Family Talk. Hi, everyone. I'm Roger Marsh, and this radio broadcast is produced by the James Dobson Family Institute. Today, you're going to hear a message from Inky Johnson, a former football star at the University of Tennessee. He has an incredibly moving testimony to share. He overcame unbelievable adversity and obstacles and searched for God's guidance through the entire experience. Now, I don't want to give any of his story away because it's so powerful, and there's a lot of content to get to, so let's get to today's broadcast. Here now is Inky Johnson's presentation at the Men's Ignite Conference in Lynchburg, Virginia this past spring here on Family Talk.
I view football like this stage. It was a platform that God had blessed me to be able to play it, but I understood very early that the NFL, the institution of it, didn't just stand for National Football League, it also stood for not for long. Meaning the average career is three and a half years, and so it's kind of like a seesaw effect. You come in, you make a lot of money, and then you're out of the league in three and a half years, and so if you don't have a certain level of financial literacy, you can lose it just as fast as you got it. But I was more concerned with, could I be committed to the process of what I was doing, the institution of football, without being emotionally attached to the results and the outcome of it? Meaning, if I didn't get what I wanted from the game of football, can I still approach it with the same attitude, dedication, and commitment level? In other words, I am a firm believer that in life, the transaction becomes the problem. And when I say the transaction, I'm speaking about when you give something a certain amount of energy, a certain amount of passion, a certain amount of time, dedication, you expect to yield a certain result. And when you don't get the results that you expected, the transaction becomes the problem. In other words, I was a kid born in inner city Atlanta. From the age of 7 years old, I was working for NFL. I got 10 games away from this so-called institution called the NFL, and I go out and I make one tackle in one moment, and my life is flipped upside down. I didn't yield the result that I thought I would yield. It's kind of like if you're married, right, and you're coming in, and you're loving on your wife, you're dedicating, you're sacrificing, you're committed, and you're doing all these things, and she never gives you validation that she appreciates it. At a certain point, the transaction becomes a problem because you're like, I'm doing everything right, but she's not appreciating it. And so I've been intrigued with how can an individual go into something and when they say they're going to do something, the commitment level stays true past the opposition, past the adversity, and past the challenge. And the commitment level that I'm speaking of is I am going to stay true to what I said I would do long after the mood that I've set it in has left. Meaning if I don't get what I want, I'm going to still give you everything I got because I said I would do so. And so the vehicle of football. I was doing a podcast 2 weeks ago, and the guy said to me, Inky, we live life on two different sides of the spectrum. I said, how so? He said, I believe when people get an opportunity to turn that light, they're going to turn it, and somehow when you look at people, you just see the good in people. He said, why do you live your life that way? I said, personally, I believe anything great that's ever been done, God has done it through the vehicle of people. And so I firmly believe there's some good in the worst of us, and there's some bad in the best of us. And so when I look at people, I understand that that's an instrument, that's a vessel by God. And so in my own personal life, anytime I've ever been elevated to the next level, the blessing came through an individual. And so with the game of football, I fell in love with it at an early age, and I had the dream, but my environment was totally different, and I didn't know if I could accomplish the dream. In other words, my mother had me at 16, and I'm coming up in inner city Atlanta in a two-bedroom home, and there was 14 of us living there. And me and my younger cousins, we would sleep on the floor every single night, and we had pallets that we would sit our cover on the side of the wall, and when we got home, we would pull them out when it was time to go to sleep. We would make our pallets. We would do this little routine to where we said, man, every day after school, we're going to rush home. We're going to play tackle football in the street. Street lights pop on. We have 10 minutes before we got to go in the house. Pure passion, not too much wisdom, right? Scarred up, bloody, whole nine. And so one night we got home, we're playing ball in the street, street lights pop on, and just as when the street lights popped on, it was a blue pickup truck sitting at the corner. And so I had the ball, and I got out of the street, and I'm standing on the sidewalk, and my three younger cousins are standing on the opposite sidewalk. And I'm waving at this truck, like, come on, man, I got a couple more moves I want to put on these young jokers, right? And he's just chilling, right? And he starts driving, and he's driving really slow. And he passes us slightly, and he parks on the curb, and out of the truck at that time got the first white guy we had ever saw in our neighborhood, right? Every drug dealer take off running, assuming he was the cops. Nicest guy in the world, right? Nicest guy in the world. He walked over in between our game, and he said, hey, man, would y'all like to play football on grass? I said, man, I would love that. Where you been, brother? The street getting rough. He said, go in the house, get your parents, get your guardian, get somebody, tell them come talk to me. I ran in the house, my Uncle JJ was there. I said, hey, Uncle, will you please come and speak to this gentleman? My uncle said, sure. My uncle walked outside, the guy extended his hand, said, hey, man, my name is Trey Hurst. He said, I don't even supposed to be over here. He said, I dropped the kid home three blocks up. I'm just riding, checking out the neighborhood. His exact words were, I see these knuckleheads playing tackle football in the street. He said, I run a league across town. I think if you bring the boys out, sign them up, I think it'll be a great opportunity for them and it could really help them in life. My uncle responded. He said, sir, we greatly appreciate it. He said, but I hate to inform you, we just don't have the money for anything like that. That's why they're playing in the street. He pointed at me. He said, his mother, she's working a double shift at Wendy's right now. She don't have it. And the other three, their fathers are in and out of the system. They don't have it. The coach, without any hesitation, said, I tell you what, you bring them to the park tomorrow, I'll sign them up and I'll pay for it with my own money. The next day, my uncle brought us to the park. I stood in line beside this guy that I didn't know from a can of paint, and I watched him take cash out of his own pocket, and he paid for me and my three younger cousins to play ball. And then my family, the only people that ended up going to college was me and my three younger cousins, he paid for in that street that night. He helped us break a generational curse in our family. But the thing I was intrigued with, I found out very early, it wasn't just something he did for Inky and his three cousins on the east side of Atlanta. It was a way that he lived his life, and he helped anybody that he felt was in need. And so most nights, I would be in the park, and I would be working out after practice, after everybody had long gone and went home, because my mother worked at the Wendy's about two blocks away from the park. And so a lot of nights, I would be sitting there, and I would be working out, and coaches thought, man, this kid Inky, he loves football, but I had a better chance at getting a meal at the park than I did with going home. And so I would be running. They would be like, man, this kid loves it. And I'm like, man, I just need a hot dog, right? But one night, my mother called Coach. And she said, Coach, I can't make it off of my shift. Can you please take Inky home? He said, sure. And so we got to 125 Warren Street in my neighborhood. It was called Kirkwood. At one point, they called it Little Vietnam. It was infested with drugs, violence, everything under the sun. And so we got to my house. I got out of his truck, and I'm standing on the sidewalk, and he said, all right, Ink, I'll see you tomorrow at practice. I said, all right, Coach. I said, man, can I ask you one question? He said, sure, Ink, shoot away. What you got? I said, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. When I asked this, he opened his door. He got out of the truck. He walked around. He stood directly in front of me. He said, Ink, man, I love you, man. Shoot away. What you got? I said, why do you live life the way that you live it? I said, because I just don't see people around me living life that way. And he said, son, I'm going to share something with you. And he said, I don't want you to ever forget it. And in this simplicity, it was yet profound. And what he said to me was, son, as long as you can live your life and make sure that somebody else's life is okay, he said, God will always make sure that your life is okay. And he got in his truck and he left. And the first thing I thought about was, man, if I could dismantle my ego. The first thing I thought about was, man, if I could dismantle my pride, like the wrong type of pride, like the pride in the Bible that comes before destruction. Like, man, if I could shift my mindset from a selfish individual to a selfless individual, if I could shift my mindset from me to we, the purpose and everything that I'm trying to accomplish will always supersede the moments that stop most people, because what I'm working for and my driving force that's behind it is not some selfish ambition. It's to bring glory to God. And so my drive would be on another level. And so the funny thing that happened coming up through my life, people would always ask me the question, hey, Inky, man, do you plan on going to college? I know you're a pretty cool little athlete, but do you plan on going to college? I would say, yeah, of course I'm going to college. And so when I started getting recruited, I'll never forget my visit to Tennessee. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever experienced in my life. But I'll never forget I had my first meeting with the academic advisors, and they said, okay, Inky, what's your plan? I said, my plan is to graduate in 3 years, and then I'm going to the NFL. They said, well, looking at your test scores, you didn't just knock it out of the box, so you may need to restructure that, stretch your plan out a little longer. I said, yeah, but I really need to graduate in 3. I really need to help my family. They said, okay, well, we'll see. And so coming into my third year at UT, I'm sitting in a room one day, and I'm watching film on the California Bears, and my defensive backs coach comes in, Larry Slade. And I'm sitting there, and he said, Ink, I got some great news for you. I said, Coach, what is it? What you got, man? He said, man, can you believe you're on track to graduate in 3 years? I said, man, that's awesome. He hands me a piece of paper. At the top, it had NFL. He said, all you got to do is play your next 10 football games. Ink, you're projected top 30 draft pick, son. I ran out of the room. I called my mother and my grandmother on the three-way. They picked up. I said, listen, after this season, we'll never miss another meal. I said, we'll never struggle again. I said, our lives are about to change forever. And little did I know, our lives were really about to change forever.
I'm Roger Marsh. You have tuned to Family Talk, a ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute. And we'll return to the conclusion of Inky Johnson's powerful story in just a moment. Here at Family Talk, we are supported by listeners like you and your kind financial donations. You know, your gifts propel us through these long summer months when we, like many other ministries, often struggle. So if you can help us continue to fight for families and marriages right now, we would really appreciate hearing from you. You can visit our online resource center at drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825 to learn more about how to partner with us financially. Well, we interrupted at a very tense moment in Inky Johnson's story, so let's rejoin his presentation right now here on Family Talk.
First game, we come out, we play California Bears. We execute all phases of the game. We get the victory. Everything went great. I was up, nominated for Defensive Player of the Week. Everything went awesome. Second game, we're playing against Air Force. Tough group of guys, disciplined group of guys. And if I could be honest with you, we had Florida the next week. And so me and the guys, we were looking at Air Force like, man, we'll come out, roll them over. We'll be out of the game by halftime preparing for Florida. In the game, Air Force had a different plan. They came out, they punched us right, slapping them out. The fourth quarter rolled around. There was 2 minutes left in the game. Game is basically over. Unless you're playing against Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, you might be in trouble. The quarterback dropped back, and I'll never forget, he released the ball to a guy. Guy catches it. He's coming down my sideline. I had a good head full of steam. He had a good head full of steam. And I'm going to make the tackle that's supposed to end the game. And as soon as I hit him and I made contact with him, it seemed as if every breath in my body left. My body went completely limp. I fell to the ground. I blacked out. It had never happened to me before. When my eyes opened, my teammates ran over to me. They said, Ink, get up. Let's go, man. Let's finish him off. I said, I can't. They said, what do you mean you can't? You always get up. Like, you're our starter. We need you. I said, I can't. They said, what do you mean you can't, man? You can nurse your injury after the game. Like, we need you. Let's go. I said, I can't feel anything. That was a shock going from the crown of my head to the bottom of my feet, one of the scariest moments of my life. The shock eventually left, and it stayed in my right arm and hand. I remember as I was lying there, they brought the spine board out, and they put me on the spine board. They were wheeling me off the field, and we got beside the ambulance, and my father was standing there. And I said to my father, I said, Pops, I got him, right? I put it on him, right? He said, yeah, son, but I think you got the worst part of this one. They rolled me up in the ambulance. Doctor said, Ink, we'll take you over, run a couple tests. Sure, everything will be fine. It's football. They rolled me over. They get me over to the hospital. They run a couple tests. They brought me back into my room, and my mother came in. She kissed me. She said a prayer. She said, Inky, it's football, man. I'm sure everything will be fine. Whatever it is, you'll get through it. And she's going to walk out of the room. And I'll never forget, I'm watching my mother walk out, and as she's walking out, The head doctor comes running from the opposite side, and he screams out, "Hey, guys, get in here. We got to rush this kid back to emergency surgery. He's about to die." And I remember looking at him, and I wanted to ask him, like, "Man, you can't use another word?" I say, like, "Brother, use a synonym, brother. Like, die? You sure? Like, that's a quick shift, right?" And he's looking at me, and he said, "Yeah, die." I said, "What happened?" He said, "You ruptured your subclavian artery in your chest. You're bleeding internally. We got to rush you back, take the main vein out of your left leg, plug it into your chest." His exact words were, "Oh, I guarantee you, you won't be here in the morning." I said, "Let's go." The next morning, I woke up. I was embarrassed. The next morning, I woke up. The game of football on my scale of life was that big. NFL contract, SEC championship. People were saying to me, "Inky, man, we're sorry about what happened to you." And I'm like, "Man, that's all you wanted?" I'm like, "Man, the only thing you really wanted was an NFL contract? Like, no substance, no value. You were efficient. You did things right, but you weren't effective. The only thing you wanted was an NFL contract. That's it?" I'm like, "Man, you really messed it up this time." It was literally as if somebody pulled the shades up on my life and they said, "Now you see life for what it's really worth." Like, I looked at people different, and it wasn't that I looked at people in a certain manner before, because I was raised right, but I started looking at people in terms of everybody I meet is fighting a battle that I know nothing about. And so the passion that I possess is equally as important to have compassion. Right? And so the way I live my life, people ask me the question all the time, "Inky, why wouldn't you change what happened to you?" I'm going to answer the million-dollar question. So my whole life, I was an athlete, right? And I was playing four sports. I got to college. I was this great cornerback. I ran a 4.38. I bench pressed 325 pounds. I jumped the 40-inch vertical. Like, I was your prototypical cornerback. But in my family life, people didn't understand. My whole life, I had a mother that resented my father, and they couldn't even be in the same room. And so I would be this kid getting these awards from the Coca-Cola in Atlanta, all these different companies, and my mother would be in the room, and I would have to go out of the back door, and my father would be standing at the back door, and he would be like, "All right, Ink, congratulations." I would give him a high five because my mother despised him. Because my mother had me at 16 and my father left. And so here I was, this kid, and to the world, it was glory, it was everything, was all good. But my household and the turmoil that was going on between my parents, I felt, they just thought it was a beef between them. But I felt it and I experienced it at every single level, and I didn't understand it. You know the crazy thing about tragedy? When tragedy happens, somehow people take the blinders off, and the only thing that's important in the situation is what's important in the situation. In other words, when I got in that hospital, they thought I was about to lose my life. They didn't know if my arm was going to get amputated. They didn't know anything. But what it did was, I was lying in the bed one day, and I had my eyes closed, and my mother and my father thought I was sleeping. And my father's lying on the floor, and his back is on the floor, and he's looking up at the ceiling, and my mother's lying on a little cot, and she's crying. And I hear my father say to my mother, "Ruby, I'm sorry." He said, "You did a great job raising that boy." My mother cried even harder. She said, "Thank you." We got out of the hospital. My father said, "Ink, you know what? For the next month, I'm going to come and live with you." And prior to that, we was at the Mayo Clinic, and when they were giving me the certain outcomes of the situation, me and my father went out into a hallway, and my father never believed in God. So here you had this son that got discipled. When he got to Tennessee, spiritually, I was all in it. I was going, giving glory to God. But I had a father, he didn't understand God because he lost his mother when he was 14 years old of cancer. And he felt as if, "Inky, if this is God, why does bad things happen to good people? Everybody in my life that believed in God, I lost them or something happened to them." And so we're in Rochester, Minnesota, and we walk out of the doctor's office, and my father said, "Inky, man, if this God that you're so crazy about, how could he let this happen to you?" He said, "I see you go to Bible study, son. I call you on Sundays just to see if you're at church or did you party the night before. And every time you're at church, son, I call the chaplain to see have you been coming to your weekly discipleship meetings. And he said, yes. Like, how did God let this happen to you? And I say, you know what, Pop? I can't answer the question. And when he said, I'm going to come and live with you, what my father was really saying was, I don't have peace in the midst of the opposition. I don't. What he was really saying to me was, Ink, I don't know how to process it. I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know how to speak about it. But if you say you're crazy about God and you're supposed to be the example of God and have the heart of God, I'm going to come and live with you and I'm going to see how you process the opposition. It wasn't so much of, I'm going to come and stay with you and I'm going to help you go to class. It was, no, I'm going to come and see if you're true to what you once said you're true to. In other words, it's a lot better to be a Christian than to act like one. So every single day I got in my routine and I would pray at the same time. And so in my household at the time, it was me, a guy by the name of Gerard Mayo, one of my best friends. He ended up getting drafted first round, 10th pick, New England Patriots. It was Robert Ayers. He ended up getting drafted first round, 18th pick, Denver Broncos. It was Ramon Foster. He ended up going free agent to the Pittsburgh Steelers, still starting until this day. And so all of my roommates in that house, we did things together. We got discipleship together, went to class together, worked out together, the whole nine. And so every single night when my father was living there, I would pray at the same time. And every time I would get on my knees beside my bed to pray, my father would say, hey, big boy. And he was talking to Ramon. Ramon's 6'7", 385 pounds, right? So that's the big boy, right? That's the big boy. And so his room was right next door to mine. And so when my father would say, hey, big boy, he would always walk by my room when I was praying, and he would go into Ramon's room. And when he would hear me finish praying, he would come back, walk into my room, and say, Ink, you need anything? I say, no, sir, I'm good. And so every single day, he was taking me to discipleship. He would take me to church. He would take me to my weekly FCA meetings, and he would do the whole routine, day after day. And on the 29th day, I'll never forget it. I'm going to tell you why I wouldn't change what happened to me. On the 29th day, I got down on my knees and I'm praying my usual time. My father says, hey, big boy. He's going to walk into Ramon's room. I could periph my father. I see him step past my door and then I see him step back. He walked into my room. I was on my knees. He said, Ink, he said, you know that God you pray to? I said, yes, sir. He said, man, you know that God take you to discipleship about? I said, yes, sir. He said, you know that God take you to church, FCA, all of that? I said, yes, sir. He said, if that God can help you handle this situation the way you're handling it, he said, son, I want to give my life to Christ. My father got baptized and he gave his life to Christ. And so when an ESPN producer asked me why I wouldn't change what happened to me, if you put it on a scale and I had to choose my father's salvation or a game called football, 10 out of 10 times, give me my father's salvation. In life, people don't give up, people don't stop, and people don't say, man, you know what, I'm done with it, because opposition and adversity happens. People don't just give up. Like, people don't burn out because of what they do. People burn out because life makes them forget why they do it. Amen. And the only thing I ask of you, with whatever our careers are, whatever we aspire to do, whatever we're involved in, the only thing I ask of you is never allow life to make you forget why you do what you do. And why we do what we do is to bring honor, bring preeminence, and bring glory to the Almighty God. That's it.
What an incredible challenge to glorify God no matter the circumstances. Friend, we hope you enjoyed the word spoken by Inky Johnson today here on Family Talk. Go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org to learn more about his incredible story. There will also be a link to his website once you're there. You'll also be able to see where Inky is speaking near you as well. That's at drjamesdobson.org, and then click onto today's broadcast page. As we wrap up this week of programs, we encourage you to listen to us on Amazon Alexa. Now, this hands-free device is an easy way to keep up to date with our latest interviews. To see how to activate your Amazon Alexa, simply go to drjamesdobson.org/Alexa. I'm Roger Marsh, filling in for Dr. Dobson for the past couple of days. Be sure to join us again next week for more riveting and informative programs. Thanks so much for listening every day this week to Family Talk, a ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.